Hey everyone, and welcome back to Lit Musings. Yes, we enjoyed ourselves so much last time that we're back for more. Once again, my name is author Parker Sinclair, and my co-host and creative genius author Jessica Osment. We're here ready to dive back into our podcast for the fantasy lover. Hey Jessica, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Trying to get geared up for this.
I know, the crazy time of year we decided to add in more things to do.
But that's how we do it.
That's how we roll. Just add more on. So I know last month we discussed the sources that kind of inspired our love for magic right. and fantasy. I can even throw in paranormal and sci-fi in there. And this topic we discussed on the podcast, and then we put on the blog. And we mostly discussed, I think, movies mainly from our childhoods when we were pretty young. And I thought it would be good to kind of continue through the years. Although moving up in the years for me is still the 80s and 90s. The best decades, I might add. And in this one, we're actually going to also relate to books we've read and discuss it too with how the movies, possibly TV shows and the books actually have influenced and led to what we're writing. And once again, at the end, we will each do an excerpt from one of our books. Sound good?
Can't wait.
Yeah, awesome. Let's jump right in then. So I was going to discuss for a movie moving up in time for me would be The Neverending Story, which of course, yes, is still pretty long ago, 1984. But the gloriousness of The Neverending Story still translates with my kiddos today, though my husband was sitting there looking at it, wondering what we were watching.
What is this?
But I think that this is a magical movie that really touched on bullying. It touched on loss that we all experience at one point in time, and that there's that power in believing in the magical, even though you may not be able to see it, and on letting those that we've lost still live inside of us, even in the hardest of times. So I think that really opened my eyes to some of those things. And in the opening of the movie, I'm not going to do a lot of spoilers on this, but it's pretty obvious throughout the movie that Bastion is our lead character, and he is being bullied to the point where he has to pretty much hide in a dumpster. He can't even get to school. And I think a lot of us at some point in our lives feel harassed or bullied or picked on by somebody at school mainly, maybe just in your neighborhood. So instead of, you know, we see something towards the end with the bullying again, but he escapes into this magical world through this book that he, quote, borrows from a store shop. Yeah, store shop owner. And it's this time, it's this first movie for me, I believe, where you kind of see a portal into this other world, that there is an existence of other worlds, that you can get there or at least experience or be a part of it and just be a normal boy. He's a normal human boy, and he's, in a way, once again, without telling too much, because I'm sure there's some of you that are now dying to see this 80s movie, that he has power over what's happening in this place. So he might not even believe it at first himself, but then he ends up kind of making some friends in this other magical world. I'm assuming you've seen this too, Jessica, this movie.
Yes, I actually rewatched it a few months ago because I wanted my daughter to see it. I thought she would get a kick out of it, and she did. And I was very, very grateful for that because, you know, she's very picky with what she watches. But I wanted her to see that growing up, reading was important to me. And just like, you know, with him, it's important with him for him to be able to escape. I want her to know that that's what reading is for anyone. It's an escape to another world, and you don't have to worry about the pressures of school. You don't have to worry about what's going on at home. You just worry about what you're reading. So
excellent point.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love that. I can't move on without talking about Falcor,
of course,
who is one of my favorite characters in the movie. The dragon that's in there is awesome. We adopted a dog that I really should have named Falcor. Instead, his name is Bodhi. I almost named him Walker, which are the, you know, the formidable dark side monstrosities, because he just, when we brought him home, all I saw were legs. I'm like, he just looks like those.
Lanky.
Those Walker, yeah. So then, you know, which also ties into the fact that I almost named my youngest daughter Anakin if she was a boy. I mean, that would have been awesome, right?
That would have been amazing.
My father-in-law was like, no. It's not happening. Not happening.
Can't do that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But then, you know, kind of tying into some books now with the, you know, and I'll just pull out of all those things I talked about with the never ending story, I'd mainly focus on Other Worlds and Dimensions, because as I, like I said, I think that might've been my first one where it was connecting our world to a different one. And I think A Wrinkle in Time does that. And I just always remember loving that book, but until I just reread it again with my daughter, because I told her the movie was coming out, so I wanted to read it, I don't think I realized how much more science was in there. And that book was written in 1962. That would have been an older book for me to read when I was little. So, I mean, that thing is transcending a huge amount of time, but there is a ton of science in there and talking about dimensions. And I was like, wow, this is intense. So it doesn't surprise me.
How did I grasp that?
Yeah. Or did I not? And that's why I don't remember it was in there.
I just kept reading because it was just that good.
It was just that good. So, you know, it makes sense that then Star Trek came on, and then I was a science degree that I studied. And it's just always been interesting to have those, once again, a normal human girl and her friend and brother realize that they have the strength, power, and heart to do something they never thought was possible. So, and then my more current one would be Terry Brooks. And this is not so much, this is more of the blurring of the magical worlds with the real world. And that's where I think you get into the paranormal and urban fantasy, where a lot of this is you're in the real world and all this stuff's kind of seeping into our world. So Running with the Demon, it stars the main character is a 14-year-old girl, which for me also, reading a lot of Terry Brooks books, this was the first time he had the lead, not only as a female, but a girl that was more related to my age. And so once again, a normal kid who, you know, ends up having power and magic and a crucial impact on the future. And, you know, that main character being that strong female now is the it thing. Finally, that is the it thing.
It is catching on everywhere.
It is catching on. It's sad that it's taken this long, but I think paving the way and leading into my next little topic would be for the powerful female lead would be Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes, most definitely.
Yeah, so we're definitely jumping up in time here. I've eked myself out of the 80s. This is 1996 to 2003. The show was on. Focused on the female lead, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I mean, nobody comes to mind sooner than Buffy when I think about a character that I grew alongside and rooted for every week, even when you're like, what are you doing? You know, I also have all of the DVDs every season. It's one of those things I reach for when I'm bummed or sick or something. And can't wait for my daughters to be old enough to be able to really watch that with me.
And appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. To understand the deeper parts of it that some people might overlook too, because they just think, oh, it's just a vampire show,
right?
Oh, it's just this you know, fictional show. And it's definitely much more than that. You know, she's this normal human, albeit somewhat shallow, which most teenagers are, I think, anyway. At some point in time, we all have our moments. I know I had mine. And she's a high school cheerleader, just, you know, chatting with her friends, and all of a sudden she's told that she's the next Slayer, and then everything changes for her. What doesn't change is the fact that we still have these undying friendships with this Scooby-like gang that she has, camaraderie formed by all of that. She doesn't give up no matter what, even when she finally gets to experience heaven and is kind of ripped out of there and brought back. She doesn't quit. And the human experiences that she has in this paranormal world. I mean, Josh Whedon did a great time, the writing team, conquering these deep topics that, once again, I love that they always had humor with it. I mean, there's that dark humor. And I think I do that a lot in my writing, to a point where some people are like, is this a funny, why should you be making a joke? And I was like, because you can't have it dark all the time. We can't. And they did an excellent job with that. And it's no wonder that they're actually getting a Buffy sequel. Did you know that, Jess?
Yes, I did, actually. I am very much looking forward to that. I was going to bring up a few topics real fast. And for those of you who don't know, there were actually three actresses who were supposed to play Buffy, but turned down the roles. And We all know Katie Holmes from Dawson's Creek.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I did not know that. And
me either.
Selma Blair.
Ooh.
Yes.
Interesting.
I knew you would like that one. And then actually Charisma Carpenter.
Yeah. That one I did hear about.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she tried. She tried. And then one thing for you fangirls, Ryan Reynolds was actually supposed to play, or he could have played Xander.
Oh, wow.
Imagine how it would have gone.
Oh, my.
Yeah, no, I thought that was crazy. I thought you guys might like that.
Oh. But,
you know that Warner Brothers actually wanted to call it Slayer instead of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So that's actually pretty cool. I didn't know that either. But
I think that would work now, but I think it really, I mean, how they kept the Buffy with all the other things, you know, the 90210E type things, I think they did the right thing with that. Although I think they probably were also worried about the movie, because I don't think the movie that came out before did very well.
No, it didn't.
Which, speaking of 90210, Dylan McKay was in that.
Yes, he was. Love me some 90210.
I mean, Charisma Carpenter, I love her, but could you imagine anybody else being Cordelia but her? I mean, I really can't. Imagine.
No, she had that down pat.
She did great with that. And like, you know, and did you have any other interesting little facts to jump in there?
No, actually, I think that's about awesome. That's it. Yeah, that's all I had.
I mean, you can relate to the fact. I mean, we're talking about girls at this age. This would be about the time that many girls might be thinking about or may have lost their virginity, and then all of a sudden the boyfriend turns into a monster. And in this show, it's literal. Literally.
Exactly.
And you're losing a loved one. I mean, they're studying for tests or having nightmares, or they're stuck in this perpetual high school thing, having to move and start all over again. And let's not forget about saving the world. I mean, they basically covered all of it. And I almost called it Sunnyside. Sunnydale. Where the Hellmouth is continuing to try to open up and just swallow the whole world. So, I mean, I don't know about you, but I basically cried alongside and laughed with Buffy, Xander, Willow, Angel. Wait, do vampires cry? Did we decide that yet? I don't even know. But and I will continue to love, talk, and reverently recommend this show on and on, probably till I'm in my 80s and 90s. Oh, I forgot to say Spike, who turned out to be one of my favorites. It's so funny to rewatch him now, how he just kind of punks out in a few of them.
Love him.
How he becomes so important. But I do also think, when I kept trying to figure out where vampires and werewolves at first, you know, entered my interest and appreciation, was I believe it had to be with Buffy. They had jump-started my love for vampires and werewolves. Oh, I forgot to mention Seth Green.
Oh, why I love Seth Green.
Why am I blanking on his character name right now? Help me out.
Hold on.
Dang. Oh, it was right there. Willow and... Yeah. Anyway, you'll find it.
Sorry, guys, we let you down.
But I admit, I'm gonna be like, you dummy, when it comes up. I admit I'm more of a lover of a good vampire and paranormal story in book format, and I think, and you tell me what you think, I think it's just because it's tricky to do it in TV and movies. I think there's always, you know, you've got these pictures in your mind and in the writer's mind, and then when you come down to putting it on screen, it can be sometimes a letdown. But I think Buffy did it perfectly, and I'm hoping this sequel, which I know Joss is behind, and most of the actors, I believe, have posted very positive things about having the sequel pop up, and that they did a good job. And there's some others that I think, I mean, of course, Angel was another show that came out after Buffy. And when people ask me who my favorite vampires are, I usually always pick Angel and Spike. Oh, and this guy, I forgot to mention, Blade.
Oh, of course. We can't forget about him.
Oh, yeah. 1998, Blade came out. Little Wesley Snipes action here. Which, who did I read was considered for that one before him? Oh, gosh.
I didn't have that written down.
I had it somewhere, but I was reading it. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm so glad it turned out to be Wesley Snipes. But he... That was a completely other form, a more brutal form of the vampire world. I can't forget to mention Stephen Dorff's Deacon Frost character, who was frightening. And this is also based on Marvel, which we could go on forever. If I even said the word Marvel, I'm starting to kind of have some palpitations here. But we will definitely have one or more Marvel discussions. I literally need to stop reading things and watching that darn trailer for the Avengers. Oh, Endgame, people.
The last one.
Endgame.
Are you ready?
So anyway, you know what? Now that I just said it, I can't even. Let's go back here. So now that we've said Blade and Marvel, Do you know who was in Blade Trinity that is now a very beloved Marvel character right now? And
Oh
you
my
already mentioned
gosh.
him. You already mentioned him. It's really funny.
Okay.
Yeah, you were talking about him with
Oh,
Buffy.
Ryan Reynolds,
Ryan Reynolds,
right?
the merc with the mouth.
Oh.
Yeah,
Oh
Deadpool was.
yeah.
That's. I think that might be the first time I really saw him in anything. Was in Trinity. He had a great character in that too. So anyway, Marvel's everywhere. They have their hands in everything. They're in tentacles in my brain, and I love it. So it's okay.
Yeah.
and I'll finish up here with just a couple more things. Oh yeah, so the werewolves thing that really kind of got brought on more with Underworld. That came out in the 2000s. That one was 2003, I believe. And although going back into the 90s, Scott Speedman was in that role, was in the werewolf role, and he was in Felicity, which came out in 1998, which is a completely non-paranormal fantasy horror show, but worth mentioning nonetheless. Anyway,
I haven't thought about Felicity in years, but I did love it.
she's doing great. I mean, how many times is she nominated for that TV show? Oh my gosh, The Americans, I think that's what it
I
is, but.
actually haven't dived into that yet, but I have been thinking about it. Now that you mention it, I probably will.
I watched about 3 or 4 episodes. I think I'll jump back in at some point, but right now with holidays, I'm not really getting much done show-wise. So once again, so yeah, Underworld, we have vampires versus lycans, basically. We have Selene, who believes, you know, she's raised thinking that that lycans are the enemy until she basically realizes she's a tool in this war of this feud that started well before her and had nothing to do with her. And anyway, she's pretty much one of my favorite vampires of all time, strength, speed, glowing blue eyes, everything. You know,
Right.
I think that my most recent book that we, well, not my most recent, but when we did our anthology together, she was a muse for me for the dark fantasy anthology that we did, The Aching Darkness. So, and then just novels with paranormal and urban fantasy. C.C. Robson is. The novelist that I started reading in 2012 when I was, you know, in the middle of the night nursing my second child, and I'm on my phone, which was really good for me, I'm sure. Blue light. So, and I, you know, reading, she has the Weird Girls series. She also does some romance books, but she, you know, started out paranormal urban fantasy author. And all the sisters together have this strength and friendship that reminds me a lot of Buffy. There's romance, mystery, suspense, probably more romance than I have ever read before. Because, like I said, I read Terry Brooks, and, you know, there's really barely anything in there. And Buffy had it a little bit. You know, you had your love interests in that too. But this one's definitely stronger, which I think made me realize that what I was kind of writing and tinkering with was okay. That I kind of had a meshing of that too. But they're page turners for sure. They were cursed and have these different powers. They're also joined by a multitude of creatures, heroes, villains, and there's that blurry line sometimes where you're kind of rooting for the villain. Werewolves, vampires, ghouls, witches, everything. So in 2012 was around the time that I started working on really taking myself seriously for the novel and reading her stuff and the True Blood author and a couple other, Jeanine Frost, I think you're speaking about Kelly Armstrong today
Yes, I am.
as well. That just influence, and I felt like this influx of these female authors jumping into this paranormal and urban fantasy really made me feel like I was onto something and that I could do this. So wanted to mention Ceci. I don't think that she is as well known as I think that she should be, and I hope that she continues to always write urban fantasy and paranormal. I know the romance stuff sells really well, but I wanted to mention her. And if I don't stop saying I am going to hang up. Anyway, I could go on forever. So I just wanted to pass this on now to Jessica, who I know is also going to talk about some great movies, stories, and shows that have influenced her, kind of moving up in time, just like me. Take it away.
Okay, I sure will. Last time I was on the show, I shared with you guys about my interest in fantasy and how it shaped my life, as well as how it introduced me into all things magical. Today, I want to discuss one of my favorite TV series, a series I'm sure many of you can share with me. Charmed was a show I definitely could relate to with only one, not only one, but three very, very strong and capable female leads, with a never-ending supply of baddies to take on. This show, which actually aired every Wednesday, was my escape from the pressures of school and everyday life. More than anything, I wanted to be like Prue and Piper and Phoebe, but I think Phoebe was probably my favorite character. Each sister to me represented a colorful personality. Jeez, I can't talk today.
It's okay.
But what I liked was when they were together, nothing could stop them. I remember thinking about how I also had three sisters and how maybe one day I'd discover we were special too, even though that never happened.
Darn. Hey, still got time.
Right? You never know.
That's right.
It's these connections that kept me going and out of trouble and in the ever-changing world of fantasy. I mentioned earlier that this is a show I want my daughter to watch with me one day. And because I want her to know that even when things get tough, you can rely on your family and your own strength within yourself to get you through the hardest of situations.
Absolutely.
Exactly. That the light can always find a way to shine through any crack. And no matter how small, no matter how much my sisters and I fought, at the end of the day, Charmed brought us all together. And how powerful is that?
Oh, totally. I mean, you could be like pulling on each other's hair, screaming, and all of a sudden you're like, wait, jumping over the couch. It's on. Shush. I don't think we had any DVR or anything going on, so everybody just needs to cut it. Cut it out.
Right? Exactly. Shut your mouth. But what I couldn't get enough of was how the show related to real world situations and how they mixed zesty magical twists between sisters, but also offered up situations one would run into from day to day. And like I said, I could go on about this forever if you let me, but I will let you guys. I wanted to kind of do something different and just, you know, see if you guys wanted to tell me who your favorite character was in Charmed in the comments. Don't be shy, and see how that differed between each of you guys and tell us, you know, what your favorite episode was. I just want to get you guys involved.
Exactly. That sounds great. And you guys can do that with Buffy too, or any of these things actually. So.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you, have you watched the new one and what do you think?
I have not yet. I was saving that for after Sabrina.
Sabrina's great.
Right. Yes. But it's definitely on my list of to-dos. But what I'm most excited about is discussing the new spins we're being introduced to by Netflix and, you know, all these different, like Hulu, all the different spins and remakes they're making of shows like Sabrina and Charmed. And how we're being introduced to the pressures of not only modern society, but how we've come together as a nation to denounce bullying.
Yes.
They're all great topics. Mm-hmm. All great topics. And leading into that, one of my favorite female authors is Kelly Armstrong, like we mentioned before.
Nice. Perfect.
Yes. while we're on the subject of powerful women, let me take you back to my high school years.
I feel like we need some music with that.
Boom. Right?
Oh, wait. That was going the wrong direction.
Oh, my gosh.
Sorry, folks.
Okay.
Don't let me start singing.
Well, to the good old times where the only place you could find me was in our small school library, zealously tucked away, soaking in every paranormal fantasy read I could get my hands on before I went home. I was lucky enough to found one of my favorite female authors at an early age, though I probably should not have been reading her books when I was. I probably don't have to tell you why.
Don't ban the books. Don't ban.
I was actually pretty surprised they hadn't. But Kelly Armstrong actually introduced me to the world of werewolves. And beginning with her own masterpiece, her incredible descriptions in Bitten, reeled me in, which is actually a show that they made. I think it has 3 or 4 seasons. Her incredible descriptions in Bitten reeled me in, empowering me to rush through the rest of the series, centered around Elena Michaels, the only female werewolf.
She's awesome.
I know, right? I loved the idea that she was the only surviving woman to have survived a lycanthrope's bite. which I thought was just the ticket I needed to survive the pressures and the drama of my budding high school life, which I think we can all relate to.
Oh, absolutely.
But again, I'm going to invite you guys to discuss with us in the comments about your favorite Kelly Armstrong book. My favorite was the first three, which was Bitten, Stolen, and Dime Store Magic. Mm-hmm. So if you guys have a favorite, tell us what your favorite is, who your favorite character is. Tell us maybe, I don't know, what was your reasoning behind reading these books when you were in high school?
And I love how Kelly has them interlink. Like, I'll be reading one of her books and all of a sudden one of the other characters will pop in.
It's a whole universe.
So I like how she links everybody together, and I hope to kind of, as I'm writing like two different stories right now, I'm kind of like, I could probably do a crossover here. I mean, who doesn't like a good crossover?
And why not?
Why not?
Exactly.
Yeah, she's great. I love her. And she's got a little bit of everything in her stories too. More than just the werewolves. Mm-hmm.
Yes, she has romance. Yes. Romance, history, everything exactly. We look for.
And, you know, as we discuss, you know, fantasy, paranormal, it's interesting because I think at heart it almost makes me feel like, and we talked a little bit about some other things too with this, but we don't necessarily need to get into that deep of a level conversation, but the fact that these shows have these horror aspects, these monsters, and you think of, you know, mothers thinking, oh, you're listening to that type of music, or you're watching monsters, oh, this has got to be some satanic thing. But when it really comes down to these characters, the ones that we love, the Buffy, the Charm Sisters, they are these incredible heroes. They are trying to do such good. It almost like kind of made me want to do good too. Right. So
they
it's
have
just
the
so...
world on their shoulders, and somehow mm-hmm. they're able to get through it all. It's insane, but it definitely gives you the drive you need to do your own thing.
Exactly. And I kind of wish I wouldn't say jealous, but envious of the fact that I feel like you really got this huge influx of these powerful women in both literature and shows at the right age. Like mine came later. I was after even college, around, you know, before I even really started getting to Buffy. I think she'd already been two seasons in. Like, I just wonder how much of an impact that would have had on me if I had had that in high school, or, you know, Kelly Armstrong, like you said, because it wasn't easy. I mean, we moved to a tiny rural town in Colorado. I was in seventh grade. My sister was in ninth. And I'm coming in from Kentucky with a thick, twangy accent and, you know, wearing all these things that was, you know, all the rage there, but totally different. And I guess freakish, you know, I had a crazy last name people made fun of. And it was just like, I went from having friends and being on the basketball team and to like struggling. So, you know, hopefully some of these great shows that we're talking about now can even help high school girls, young girls right now, even though they're older shows. And like you said, they're remaking or redoing or sequeling or whatever, rebooting some of these that everybody loves. And I'm not one of the mind to be like, I'm not going to watch that. There's no way it's going to be better. That's awful. How could they possibly do that? Like, even Point Break, my husband was straight up like, no way. And actually, you know, going in with an open mind, it wasn't bad, but, you know, it'll never be the same as Point Break. I am an FBI agent. Or what?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. When I was in high school, I had just moved from a city based where we were close to the suburbs, and when we moved, it was way out in the middle of nowhere, and I had no friends. And Bitten, I believe, is when I moved, that's when I picked that up. And it definitely helped me see that, you know, no matter what you're going through, just keep trucking. Don't let anything bring you down. So I think a lot of the new shows that are coming out are bringing in a lot of the issues that we see today. And they're trying to help the kids who were in our place as we were watching these shows get through these issues. And I really do. I have grown to respect some of these directors who are trying to do what no one else has done.
Yes. I know we've talked a lot about other dimensions and everything. Do you have a preference for your fantasy or paranormal? Do you want to be in another world? Do you like the real world with the magic infused? What's your, or do you kind of just like them both the same, or do you have a preference?
I've actually written a bit of both, but I think where otherworldly, I think when your main character travels to another world and they're thrown into situations they wouldn't normally understand, and they're tested, their character is tested, their strength is tested. I tend to lean toward that route. What about you?
I feel like when I was when I first started reading fantasy, it was all going to another world. I mean, even Terry Brooks' first one I read of his is Magic Kingdom for Sale Sold, and it's this man who lost his wife and has been grieving and just decides to answer this ad to buy a castle. And he literally
Wow.
goes and is transported into this other world. And I'm like, wow, you know, so I loved, because you really get that world building. And I know a lot of times we do a world building too, where it's a, if it's a different type of our reality.
Right.
I do like both. I guess I kind of gravitate towards it being in our world just because they can infuse a lot of no normal human things a little bit more than not. But yeah, I do like them both too. And I pretty much think all I read was other world stuff at the beginning. So maybe it's just because it's still kind of new that I prefer more of the urban fantasy feel. But and I think that in my series, The Alex Connor Chronicles, I do both. Like, I've had Alex leave and go somewhere else. So I think you can kind of infuse them into your genre and kind of play around with both of them.
Right. In a way, they're one and the same. You're still being introduced to something that no one else has been introduced to. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
very cool
I think it's
stuff.
okay to do
Exactly.
that.
All right. So if we're ready, we can do our readings. And then we'll kind of close out and talk about what our some of our topics might be for next year and let you guys enjoy your holiday. I am going to read from my novel Truth, and it does pertain to kind of that question I just asked too, is and what I was just talking about, another world or dimension. And this is when in the second book, Alex starts to realize that maybe she is some dreams that she's experiencing maybe are actually a different reality.
Yes.
So this is from my novel Truth, The Alex Connor Chronicles, Book 2.
Ooh.
And this is on Chapter 11, Into the Storm. I knew where I was before my eyes even cracked open. The fairy light and the mossy earth beneath me were all I need to know. I was back in Avalon. I rose to my feet quickly, eager to see Lestan. We used to see each other in my dreams a lot more than we do now. Perhaps Avalon was a childhood dreamland, and I was growing out of it as I finally moved into womanhood. I took my time walking around the glass house. Lestan loved the. Now I'm having a time time talking. Lestan loved this greenhouse. Growing and tending the plants was something he and his mom used to do together. She died when he was young, so we were both sort of orphaned, he by death and the arm's length at which his dad left him, and me by a deceased father and a mother who was who knows where. The greenhouse was glowing less than usual, and every few feet there were cracks in odd places. I didn't know what happened or if I was going to be safe there. Pushing my worry aside and drawing some earthen power into my being, I made my way toward the door, which was barely hanging on by its hinges. Once I wedged myself through the doorway, the sight devastated me. The once gorgeous orchids, trays of unique mosses and vines with blooms that once glowed and burst with light, were barely hanging on, if not destroyed altogether. Dirt, rocks, roots, and bits of gloriously colored petals were strewn all over the floor. I crouched down to assess the damage further when I spied a huge black cat slinking through the door. I froze. The creature eyed me immediately, but played aloof and walked along the outskirts of the greenhouse, stalking, sniffing, patting, and flicking his tail along the way. I kept my eyes on him, turning in a slow circle in my crouch, my breathing silent and my nerves on edge. I dare say his father does have a temper, doesn't he? What the hell was that? The chilling, sarcastic voice echoed all around me and inside my head. Crap, was Vex here? Dang, I didn't do anything, I swear. Who said that? I heard a thunk and spun 180 degrees, spotting the cat instantly atop one of the only tables that was still intact. He began to absent-mindedly lick his paw, his body half the size of a panther, and nothing near the size of the domestic cats I have ever known. There's only two of us here that I can see, unless I'm just a voice in your head and not truly here at all. The cat continued to lick himself, but I had the sneaky feeling that he was the one speaking to me, crazy as that sounds. Though why did I still think it was crazy to be around talking animals in magical places? Terra and Vex had already christened that whole market for me. I rose slowly and made my way toward him, power in my fingertips, the green leaves trickling off my fingers. Whose father has the temper, Lestan's? The cat stopped licking his paw and looked at me briefly before eyeing my glowing fingers. His eyes returned to mine before his voice once again invaded my head. You're not from here, but you can wield our Avalon power all the same. Who are you, girl? Bossy cat. Well, they all are, really. My name is Ila. I'm sorry. My name is Ila. And no, I'm not from here. So this place does exist? This isn't all in my head? And you didn't answer my question. Who did all of this, and where is Lestan? I spun around, hoping he was coming this way, my friend and my savior. Well, Ila, Lestan's father, the king, our king, is the one who tore this place apart. Lestan's favorite and most cherished space brought to ruins. The woods echoed with his fury at Lestan's failure. Failure? What did Lestan do? Or rather, what did he not do? It had something to do with you, Ila, the cat's voice answered my question, even though I didn't say it aloud. Yes, your name was the one tossed around in fury. All I heard was his father yelling, "Here! Ila was supposed to stay here!" Whoa. What in the world was going on? Rather, what in that world is going on? Lestan helped me heal, but never asked to come with me. Honestly, I thought Avalon existed only in my head, a world created as a way for me to escape all the pain and fear of my world. The cat stood, stretching out his claws, raking them into the wood where it groaned under their sharpness and weight. His eyes dug into mine, flecks of gold swimming into the pools and glowing like the sun. As he made his way toward me, I stiffened, yet nothing in my power sensed danger, only wariness. When he rubbed up against me, I was in shock, my mouth opening and closing like a fish out of water. Oh, we're real, Ila, just as your dimension on your earth is real. You're a dimensional traveler, and one that our king permitted to enter. No one is allowed here besides our own. You're different somehow, and he wanted you to stay. Why do I keep getting freaky old men wanting to trap me? I've had enough already.
You're good.
Yet I do remember wishing I would never leave Avalon. But why? Why didn't Lestan ever ask me? There were many times in my life I would have been happy to stay. That I do not know. Perhaps Lestan can tell you more, though I don't foresee when he'll be permitted to leave his home again. Lestan's place, our place, was in ruins. And then an idea came to me. I could heal the plants here, couldn't I? My eyes glinted as I looked at the cat. Oh, I've seen that look before, girl. That look is one of gloriously terrible ideas, it is. Yes, perhaps it was a terrible idea. Lestan's dad did destroy it, after all. He may not be delighted to see it back in one piece. Of course, with what he had done to Lestan, I could care less about what His Highness would think. May I ask your name, cat? You're much more than a cat, though, aren't you? How about you help me fix this place, Lestan's place? You obviously care for him in some way, or you wouldn't waste your time telling me his sad story. I motioned around the glass house, the disaster before me fueling my desire to do something, anything. The cat stretched, leapt from the table, and in mid-flight, he changed. Not into a larger form, no, he transformed into a massive elk. Horns as wide as the walls were tall. He was a gorgeous sight, though I was worried about the glass being shattered if he turned the wrong way too quickly. Oh, don't worry about me being clumsy, Ila, for I can change in a blink of an eye. Lestan calls me the best guard in all the land. And on his last syllable, his eyes sparkled gold, and he changed into a massively winged bird with claws as sharp as knives and eyes glinting and as beady as any of the earth-dwelling raptors I studied. Of course, Lestan is the only one who knows about me. You're bound to Lestan, and now we shall be bound as well with our secret. I cannot say what the king will do once he sees what we've done, but perhaps if he knows you helped, things may not be so bad for the prince. Now that was an odd statement, and a chill ran up my spine, leaving icy foreign pinpricks in its wake. Before I could ask the questions swarming in my head like hornets, the bird changed into an enormous gorilla and casually lifted massive pieces of a destroyed table. Once he had all the parts somewhat close together, his eyes swam with gold once again, and the table was mended in an instant. Shock struck through me first, and then a smile spread across my face. My name is Thatcher, friend Isla, and I am a shapeshifter and fixer of inanimate objects. Of course, I'm a destroyer as well, and being both has exiled me from my people. Even my own parents watched me leave without a word, he said, his eyes distant in an old memory. One makes a few mistakes, and well, here I am. Well, I wasn't the only hybrid with magical abilities that had been abandoned. Sort of kismet for Thatcher and I. I extended my hand out to him, and he changed in an instant to a smaller, hamster-like animal, and stood up in my hand, whiskers twitching in time with his fluttering heartbeat. Nice to meet you, Thatcher. As you're Lestan's friend, you're mine as well. You may count me as family till yours gets their heads out of their constant changing asses. Thatcher looked up at me with a tiny creature smile, and I swore I heard a little chuckle. Now, shall we get to work? Thatcher looked up at me again. I smiled as we made our way through the madness, two abandoned hybrids cleaning and mending the king's destruction. So I know I call her Isla in this. This actually is Alex. Isla is her real name, was the name she was born with. I won't go into much detail about that, but I probably should have clarified that before reading, since it's called Alex Connor Chronicles, and many of you are probably new to the series. So that is her in a world called Avalon, and she has a history with Lestan. So, you know, that's going to get very interesting after that part as well. So that is my excerpt for today from Truth, the Alex Connor Chronicles, book two. Thanks for listening.
A lovely reading, I might add.
Oh my, I feel like this mucus from winter won't go away. I'm like, sorry, everybody.
For my reading today, I thought to stick to the idea of interdimensional travel would be a good idea. So I decided to read from my novella, Rift.
Sweet.
I'm starting with chapter 3, labeled The Catacombs of the Dead. A gust of icy air rushed through the halls of the cave, lifting a bit of sand and dust along with it. There was no need for a lantern in the stifling quiet hallways as Zaya's body issued a lovely violet glow, enough to light the way through the many tunnels her people had created to house the bodies of their dead. No sign of digging utensils could be found, and the walkways were completely clear. The reddish color of...
We are struggling.
Okay, let's try this again. The reddish color of steeping walls had a conglomerate of other types of rocks mixed in, and the cave floor was rather smooth. Inside the first tomb, Victor took a moment to distract his companion by asking about the catacombs and how they came to be. He utilized her fluorescent light to scan the glass seed-like coffins. Pressing his hands along the glossy surface, he studied the contents. The female residing within the cut glass magically floated, her shimmering hair curled freely as if she were frozen in time. Although the gracious display was desirable, it ominously suspended the valsprig as though she were stolen from the present, poised in a continuous loop over a never-ending nothingness. We belong to this planet and all the creatures that reside on it. When our kind leave this world, we are placed in the tombs made of crystal to preserve the body. It is said that the coffins work with the planet to keep us safe by energizing the protective gate that separates the realms of the lost with those of the way. It has been this way since before I can remember. Our leader and my uncle, Brahma Zar, has ruled since before I was born and has carried my people through many hard times. His way is the only way my people have ever known. His laws are respected as written word because he has a special connection with our one true god, Qom. Qom is a cosmic asteroid that travels throughout the universe, passing over planets to give them life. Legends say one day Qom came to our rock and decided we would be the compass for all life and our ways would be universal with all our kind. Deciding stealth was the best protection against lurking strangers, Victor continued to speak to Zaya in their special way. So you have one representative that speaks directly to this asteroid as it enters your orbit every cycle it makes through the galaxy. Your uncle, was it? Victor put a lot of emphasis on the word uncle. He hoped her having family in high places kept them from any harm once they passed through the gates of the city. Yes, he is, but it's not what you think. My poor uncle's elderly body is weak, and his body is weak, and he has left it up to me to take care of most public appearances, to keep the Valsprig behind him politically. He is capable of ruling, even from afar, but has put off social gatherings for the time being. We will be safe once we get across the channel and through the caves. Do not worry. Yet worry was all that filled Victor. What Zaya was asking, to trek through the ominous caves and risk his life, was too much. He never claimed to be heroic or supermanly, just curious. He was just a scientist trying to learn of other dimensions and bring other cultures together for the common good. Still, the blade she had given him did feel good as he palmed it tightly. Its attractive luster gave him a higher sense of security and stilled his jumpy nerves. Maybe I'll chance it. Where else would I go anyway? All thoughts ceased as the hall gave way to a much larger room, and Zaya's radiance became less effective, forcing her to retrieve a small cylindrical object from her bag. She waved it in an infinity symbol motion. And small sprites of light shot through the glass. It was a fluorescent flashlight filled with tiny flying bugs. Victor had made a similar contraption when he first arrived. He chuckled to himself as he thought of the simplicity of the idea and how it was something the Valsbrig people used. The people of Earth could stand to learn a thing or two from these humble beings. The jet black space around the room faded back as the light from the glass lantern in Zion's palm shined at nearly 20 feet in diameter. It gave Victor more visual light to see the artwork covering the walls surrounding the room. Elegant teal symbols traced over a beautifully inlaid design that depicted a vision of Valspritz. Although this planet was not round like his own home planet, it had valleys and mountains like Earth. This belief was comparable to the first settlers of humankind and their idea that Earth was flat. This set on a chain reaction of doubt and a flood of questions about everything he'd ever learned. Mostly, he wondered how it would even be possible for a planet to form as flat as this culture presumed their home was. Victor persuaded his eyes to continue the story of the alien hieroglyphs so delicately told. Portrayals of marvelous distant stars and clusters of galaxies merging into a colossal cosmic soup lined the tomb's doorways. The Valspritz even went so far as to use shimmering paint to trace the carvings in the cave. A surplus of color stirred as they passed by, apparently activated by their movement. They told stories of ancient universes that were unknown to man and explained how all of existence came to be. Victor would be lying if he pretended not to be curious. "Is this your actual written history?" he asked Zaya as she watched his eyes dart back to the tombs. "Because this is entirely different from anything my people know and believe to be true. This," he motioned, casting a shadow along the cavern that fell onto the illustrations, "this would cause my people to question their own existence. I mean, this is some pretty outlandish information," he added. "Your planet is no older than an infant, just plucked from the mother's womb. This type of thinking is to be expected. Humans do not have the knowledge to understand how the divine universe was created. They do not understand the origins of life and probably never will. Brahma has told us that we are Qom's sacred people and have the protection of his multitudinous power. This," she pointed to the intricate etchings, "this is an account of our past, present, and future." If anyone would make him believe a talking asteroid named Qom fathered an alien race, it was Zaya. Right? Everything about her nature made him trust her judgment. He knew it was far-fetched, but believing in her made the impossible possible and added dimension to his otherwise droneish life. He had so much to tell the people of Earth and hoped it had made out alive to tell the tale. "When we get to the capital, I want you to tell me everything you know about Valspert's history. Everything," he reiterated with a stern gesture of his hazel eyes. Zaya patiently nodded back to him, seeing no harm in enlightening him of the details of her ancestors. He was a funny fellow, curious for knowledge that she could not deny him. With little time to read all the tombs revealed, he took in every bit of imagery the light could reach and avoided and avidly soaked in the information as if it were his favorite meal. Savagely, he thrust the button on his tape recorder. Zaya allowed him an extra 10 minutes to look at her people's foretelling of the future. She herself never ventured too far into that corridor for fear of interpreting it incorrectly. Only the royal family was allowed to inside the tombs of the future. She left that bit of responsibility up to Brahma. He had the closest connection to Qom and could accurately prophesy the coming events of prospect. Before long, Victor noticed more eyes glaring at him from the long-forgotten rooms littered with dead aliens. As the light passed them, the lost ones closed in on the receding light and could be seen reaching for him. He pulled the dagger from his satchel and gripped it as he extended it out from his body to ward off any stray claws heading his way. The cerulean gems flashed as the cannibals grew closer. "Follow me," Zayak called, forced to take another long hallway through the dark. They ran through and came out near a large body of water that engulfed the pocket of space. More writings ran down the cavern, spanning underneath the swell of water. "Jump!" he heard Zaya cry. Victor obeyed her command and swiftly drove into the frigid water. Its icy embrace was more welcoming than he expected. He turned his body, paddling his hands around in search of her. He found her a few feet away, diving deeper into the fissure lit by the submerged archaic symbols. Thankful, he had taken a deep breath before venturing into the crevice. Victor swam down, following Zaya's every move. And I'm going to stop there, guys, just in case you want to read this story, because it's not very long. I chose this excerpt because it just solidifies why I think going into another dimension would be an amazing adventure, because, you know, you would learn so much about the other culture. We as humans, we have a lot to learn.
Yes. And
we could be humbled by another alien race, whether that's true or not. But in this story, my main character, Victor, is very zealous in learning and helping the planet. And I wanted to write a story that, you know, didn't make humans seem like they were amazing creatures. Because, you know, we're not exactly... perfect.
without our many, many flaws. Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. And I wanted to write a story that explained to people that the environment is something to take seriously. And if we're not careful, we could destroy ourselves.
So, love it. Thank you. Right up my alley. Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. That was great.
No problem. Thank you for letting me read it.
All right. So we are going to close things up for this podcast, and we will see you in 2019. We are going to touch on a variety of theme topics in fiction, whether it be friendship or coming of age, first romance, different things. And once again, as we've been asking you guys for a lot of comments to help us drive forward on this crazy bus, please let us know if there's a theme you love to find in your books, or themes maybe even that you don't like that creep up in there that you wish you would stop finding. So we would like to touch on that. We can even find guests that can discuss it with us as well, which we were going to have a guest at the end here, but it got a little hard with holidays and timing and stuff. So we will definitely be doing that next year. So we hopefully have some feedback from you guys on this one and what you'd like us to discuss in the future. I'll let you close out too, Jessica. Say bye to everybody.
Bye. Yes, guys. Please submit your hidden gems. We would love to dissect them.
Absolutely. Yes. Literally. No. All right, guys. Enjoy the holiday season. Take care. Thanks for listening. This is Lit Musings Podcast with author Jessica Osmond and author Parker Sinclair. Have a great one.
Follow us on parkersinclair.net/LitMusingsPodcast.